Posses of individual investors are now lighting up marijuana stocks. I'm David Brancaccio. The individual investors who gather around Reddit blogs and buy the daylights out of stocks like GameStop are now focusing on cannabis stocks, especially Tilray, based in Canada, up 51% yesterday, up another 14% right now. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Tilray shares doubled in price just between Monday and Wednesday. The company appears to be the most highly touted on Reddit's Wall Street Bets forum, which in large part fueled the GameStop rally. And just as with GameStop, there's speculation that Tilray stock is heavily shorted. A so-called short squeeze is what helped drive up GameStop shares even higher than they would have gone just on retail investor interest alone. Some hedge funds, which had bet on GameStop shares declining, lost billions. Cannabis stocks had been going up even before the new attention from retail investors. They've been on the upswing since the November presidential election, on expectations that the Biden administration and a Democratic-controlled Congress will loosen federal restrictions on marijuana. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Checking markets, the Dow is up 67 points, 0.2%. Both the S&P and the NASDAQ each up 0.3%. The 10-year interest rate benchmark, the Treasury yield, up at 1.15%. As pharmacies begin administering COVID vaccine today to those eligible in each state, the Wall Street Journal's reporting that, for instance, CVS and Walmart have the discretion to decide who gets unused vaccine from waiting lists. Among the decisions, pharmacy employees or the public. The SEC has new rules directing stock exchanges to make more stock data open and free, including good stuff like how much supply and demand there is for a stock. But now the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, and the Chicago Board Options Exchange are petitioning a federal appeals court to review this, Marketplace's Justin Ho reports.
Supply and demand data can help investors figure out what price people are willing to pay for a stock. And that can help investors predict what will happen if the stock does reach that price, says market historian John Steele Gordon.
Whether there'll be a sudden bunch of sell orders or a sudden bunch of buy orders. You know, in effect, you can see the future.
The exchanges have this information, and they sell it, typically to big institutional investors. Evan Raleigh at the University of Connecticut says those investors are willing to pay a lot for that kind of information.
They're going to go trade, 10 million shares of something. They want to know, down to the penny, how much they can get for those.
The rules make it easier for retail investors to access that information, too. But Raleigh says smaller investors probably aren't making big enough trades for it to make a difference.
It's too much data, for them to manage.
The exchanges said they had no comment for this story. The SEC's rules are set to take effect later this year. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The documentary film we're watching for this month as part of Marketplace's Econ Extra Credit project is about a campaign from the 1970s by office workers for better treatment, higher pay, and respect. It's called 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. There's a scene in the documentary toward the dawn of that movement when an administrative person is sitting there at work at an office at Harvard University, and this happens.
It was noon. There was nobody else in the office except for me. A student comes in and looks me dead in the eye and says, "Isn't anybody here? Can't you see me? I'm right in front of your eyes. I'm here."
That is Kara Nussbaum, who went on to become a key leader of the 9 to 5 movement, who much later had a senior role in the Labor Department under Clinton. She joins us now. Ms. Nussbaum, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, when you hear you right there, it's not the invisible man. It was the invisible woman.
I'll tell you, in those days, it was those issues of respect that hit us first because we took for granted the issues of pay, bizarrely. The notion that somehow we were expendable, not even worthy of knowing our names very often. We had members of the organization who said their bosses couldn't keep them straight when there were two women in the office. They got their names mixed up.
It also emerges that different companies would gather together in a meeting to essentially fix prices on what they paid their secretaries.
We discovered that the biggest clerical employers in Boston were setting wages. We confronted them. They were walking in with boxes of key punch cards because that's how they kept clerical data in those days. We embarrassed them. We went to their board meetings, but we also filed a suit against them. And finally, they disbanded the group and in many cases had to increase pay by 10% or more. And those changes were the kinds of fights that showed that you could go up against the boss. You could beat them at their own game by showing the power of working women.
I mean, it certainly traveled outside of Boston. You had chapters all over the country, as far away as Atlanta, Seattle.
Women everywhere wanted to be part of this new change. In the time of what was rupture in every part of our society.
I mean, unions in general were stronger in the 70s. Now you're the director, the founding director of Working America. That's the largest non-union workers group in the United States. It says something, right, that there's so much work to do with people who are not unionized these days.
We felt we had this tremendous momentum in the 1970s, and we did, but we didn't see what was coming in the 1980s. We announced the national expansion of our union, District 9 to 5, the very same week that Reagan decides he's going to fire everybody at the Air Traffic Controllers Association. And that's been the trajectory that we've lived under for the last two generations. Women were allowed to become managers and professionals, and now women enjoy many more opportunities. But that was true largely for middle-class women, for white women. But for the rest of working people, women and men, things got much worse. We need to now look at how do we learn the lessons from the 1970s. We're in a similar period of upheaval. How do we make sure that we make advances in this next decade?
Karen Nussbaum with Working America These Days. And you get to know a lot more about Karen Nussbaum in the documentary film 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. Ms. Nussbaum, thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you type in marketplace.org/newsletters, you can sign up for the Econ Extra Credit one, focusing on the one documentary a month we're doing. Online, we also talk about the interplay between the 9 to 5 movement and the Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton Hollywood film from 1980, second only that year to The Empire Strikes Back. Also, if you get to see the documentary on PBS or the PBS app, I would very much like to get your reactions to the film. Use email extracredit@marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.